Hello, I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday. In October of 1943, the Gestapo came to Copenhagen to round up 7,500 Jews. But the Danish police did not help smash down doors. Churches read letters of protest. Neighbors helped families flee to villages on the Baltic coast, and local fishermen loaded up boats and landed them safely in neutral Sweden. The story is a complex tale. There is some ambiguity. And of course, some people made some money when they took people to Sweden. But this treatment of people of the Jewish faith in Denmark was so different than in other parts of Europe. And our guest this hour, the central question of his very interesting book, is why did Danish Jews survive in Hitler's rule in World War II when other European Jews, as we well know, did not? The book is Countrymen, the Untold Story of How Denmark's Jews Escaped the Nazis, of the Courage of Their Fellow Danes, and of the Extraordinary Role of the SS. Bo Lidegaard, the author, is editor-in-chief of the leading Danish newspaper. He also has a very interesting diplomatic past. He has worked as a member of the Danish Foreign Service before joining the office of the Danish Prime Minister as ambassador and permanent undersecretary of state. He also is a Danish historian. And he has worked on the team preparing the 2009 UN Conference on Climate Change in Copenhagen. A couple of his other books, Defiant Democracy and A Short History of Denmark in the 20th Century. We'll be welcoming phone calls. The book that we're talking about includes heretofore unpublished material from families who escaped, and also the testimony of eyewitnesses, senior Danish leaders, even the Germans who ordered the roundups. Our phone number is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Email is talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page, where we already have some comments, is the Kathleen Dunn Show. Bo, thank you ever so much for being with us.
It's a pleasure, Kathleen.
Your book is absolutely fascinating on so many levels. The history is fascinating, but then it's this huge moral component of what makes people do the right thing. And isn't that always worth exploring?
Exactly. I guess that's the whole point of trying to retell this story, is exactly that. You know, the history of the Holocaust is so ugly that I thought it would be worth the while to really try to understand what made one of the few exceptions possible, what actually made people make the right choice instead of making the wrong one.
Mm-hmm. Can you give us a little bit of the history? What kind of relationship did Denmark have with Germany during the war?
Well, Denmark, of course, is a very small country neighboring Germany. And as the Nazis took power there in 1933, Denmark remained neutral and very afraid of being attacked by Nazi Germany. And that attack came in April of 1940, when Hitler marched north and occupied Denmark and Norway the same morning in April of 1940.
Mm-hmm.
But the very special situation evolving in Denmark was that the Danish government and the Danish parliament remained in the country and actually undertook to rule the country while the German occupation forces were holding the territory. And that meant that throughout the occupation, which lasted more than 5 years, the Danish authorities remained in office and tried to protect the citizens, the country, the democracy as best it could while under German occupation.
And the Germans were okay with occupation because they needed, what, Danish food? They needed Danish cooperation in some way?
They wanted Danish cooperation. And they wanted to keep Denmark as a showcase for how a country could be subordinated and become a sort of vassal state for Nazi Germany. So Hitler called it a model protectorate, an example of a territory that was held by the Germans, but kept with a degree of its own sovereignty, but of course eventually subject to the Nazi rule.
Somewhere I read, maybe it was in one of the many book reviews which have been so laudatory of your book, that perhaps the Germans saw in the Danish a reflection of what they wanted to be. Another Aryan people saw people who looked like them, and thus they wanted them to be a part of what this new world order might be.
There's no doubt that the Nazi view of the Scandinavian countries and of the Netherlands was very different from their view of the Eastern European countries, with the Slav population, which in the Nazi ideology was subordinated to the Aryan race. So there was a strong element of racism in this. But this is not the only explanation, because if it had been the only explanation, it would be the same for the Netherlands and for Norway, and it shouldn't apply to the Danish Jews. So while the political construct was made possible by the racism of the Nazi ideology, the actual construct was one that was developed for political reasons, and it was very unique to Denmark compared also to the other countries that were held or considered the same way by the Nazis.
You were able in this book, the whole book is so interesting, but you were able to find some unpublished material, the stories, the diaries really of families who escaped and also contemporary eyewitnesses. This is material, it's my understanding, Bo, that we have not seen before.
That's absolutely true. I had the chance to get access to material which we didn't know existed, because for most people, of course, who were subjected to the Nazi persecution, their main concern was to survive and to escape. But a few of them actually kept diaries and notes that describes hour by hour, day by day, how the individual felt being singled out from their society and forced into escape. And because I had this unique material, I developed a concept for the book where I basically try to follow events as they occurred day by day. And keeping this very contemporary focus, trying to recreate the mind frame of the day, not only of those who escaped, but also of their fellow countrymen within Denmark and of the Germans. Because one of the extraordinary things about this story is that the civil resistance in Danish society, rejecting the logic behind going after the Jews, that civil resistance actually also had a very significant impact on the way the Nazis approached the Jewish issue in Denmark.
Let's move ahead to the late summer of 1943, when the order came down from Eichmann to the local German authorities in Copenhagen that it was time to rid the city of its Jews. And it is so dramatic when you write in the book of the weeks before then and the rumors that were rampant and who to believe and who in the government was trying to get information from the Germans to find out exactly when it was going to happen and if indeed it was a rumor or what action was going to take place. Take us a couple days before that time and how people, and then the remarkable story of how people in Denmark responded to this. Did people know what was indeed going to happen and very soon?
Well, there was a growing sense in September 1943 that an action was upcoming. And there was a great anxiety within the Jewish community and indeed within the Danish society at large. But nobody knew anything for sure. And I should just point it out, there was a lot of uncertainty, a lot of rumors. And when you read the diaries of those directly concerned, it is striking how long people chose to believe that the best strategy was to remain at home.
Mm-hmm.
And in a way, it's also logic, because so far, for 3.5 years of occupation, the Danish society and the Danish government actually had been able to protect the Danish Jews. So while the Holocaust was unfolding in throughout occupied Europe, the Danish Jews at this point in time still lived completely normal lives within the civil society. The Germans had tried on a number of occasions to approach the issue and to insist that the Danish Jews be singled out like they did in all other occupied countries, stamping their identity papers, forcing them to wear a yellow star, all the things that preceded deportation and eventually the murder. But from the outset, the Danish authorities, and indeed the Danish king, King Christian, had flatly refused to take any steps of any kind, singling out the Jewish part of the population, insisting that according to the Danish constitution, which formally still remained in force, according to the constitution, there was no way of distinguishing between Danes of Jewish origin and other Danes. So it was kind of breaking point in the relationship between the occupying forces and the Danes, that this issue the Danes would not approach, and the Danish government had made it clear that if the Germans insisted in any measure against any Jews in Denmark, that would be the end of this arrangement by which the government remained in force.
Hmm. Because after all, as the title of your book would indicate, we are countrymen.
Exactly. So the reason for the rumors to intensify in September was that the government, for other reasons, resigned in late August, and therefore the protection of the Danish government no longer were there. In September.
Hmm.
And this is why when the order came down, actually provoked by the leader of the occupying forces in Denmark, a notorious Nazi, Dr. Werner Best, who was Hitler's personal envoy to Copenhagen. But the problem of this leader of the Nazis in Denmark, his problem was that he had two objectives that Hitler had personally ordered him to achieve in Denmark. And one was to round up the Danish Jews and rid Denmark of its Jews. And the other objective was to maintain this model protectorate, as Hitler said. The difficulty being, of course, for Dr. Werner Best, that while he could uphold the model protectorate if he did not go after the Jews, he realized that if he went after the Jews,
I see. Mm-hmm.
This whole construct would fall apart.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore he was trying to find a way of doing it that would not stir up too much trouble with the Danes.
We're going to welcome phone calls and hear more of this remarkable story, the story of escape. And what was striking to me is how many families, just as a matter of course, took people in. And and help them get on boats. And granted, some people were in it to make some money. Some of the fishermen charged fairly high rates to get people safely to Sweden. What was striking was how many farmers and families just took people in. No questions asked. Of course, we'll help you. Our phone number for your comments and questions for Bo is 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. Countryman is the name of Bo Lidegaard's book, The Untold Story of How Denmark's Jews Escaped the Nazis, of the Courage of Their Fellow Danes, and the Extraordinary Role of the SS. It is truly a book that you'll be thinking about and talking about long after you have read it. The question, one of the questions, is why the Danes stood up for the Jews. And there's another part to the story. They did nothing to defend their own communists, but they did stand up for the Jews. So why did it happen there in Holland? Why did 80% of Jews die? What about France? We're looking at what happened in Danish, the construct of this society, and the remarkable story of when Jews knew they had to flee and how they were able to do so. Welcoming your calls. We'll take them momentarily. And the email again, talk@WPR.org. Facebook is the Kathleen Dent Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Our guest this hour is the author of Countryman, Bo Lidegaard. He is the editor-in-chief of the leading Danish news paper. He's written several books on modern history and has quite a lengthy diplomatic career as well. Diplomat in the Danish Foreign Service, in the office of the Danish Prime Minister, as ambassador and permanent undersecretary of state. He also did the preparation work for the 2009 UN conference on climate change held in Copenhagen. And he's joining us by phone today from Copenhagen. Our phone number, 800-486-8655. This is a Facebook comment that has come in, Bo, thanking you for having written the book. She writes, Colleen, members of my family lived in Denmark during World War II and were part of the Danish resistance. One of the things that struck me from hearing their stories was their ability to care and show compassion. I was told my family owned a bakery and had a son in the resistance. After the war was over, they gave food to the lowly German infantrymen because they knew they would starve in Germany. The fact that they could risk their lives for fellow Jewish citizens and show compassion to Germans was always humbling. Was there an active resistance? And if so, how was that organized? And what about this story of giving food to lowly German infantrymen after the war? Because after all, they were hungry as well.
Right. The resistance was beginning to bite in Denmark in the course of 1943. And actually, the reason for the government to resign towards the end of the year was exactly the increasing resistance. And the resistance organized just in the weeks when this action against the Jews took place. But it was very disorganized at the beginning, and therefore the organization of the escape actually happened very locally. It was a society that had no government, had no free press, had no overall organized resistance. And therefore, when the Germans actually went after the Jews, it was left to very ordinary citizens to decide how to respond, what to do, how to actually cope with the fact that the Germans went after their neighbors, their colleagues, the parents of their classmates, and so on. And the amazing thing there is that for almost everyone, the reaction was to actually show compassion and help. And in the first instance, they simply helped people hide in the hours leading up to the action. There was a warning which was actually initiated by the Nazi leadership in Denmark in order to avoid a major confrontation with the Danes. So the Nazis themselves were tipping off Danish politicians, who in turn tipped up off the Jewish leaders, who then spread the word.
Mm. And the warning was what? Get out now?
The warning was when exactly the action was forthcoming, and that it actually would be coming. And therefore, 2 days in advance of the action, this warning convinced almost all the Danish Jews that this time it was actually serious and that they had to get out of the way.
Mm-hmm.
And what they basically did was that they went into their neighbors, knocked the door, and said, please help.
Yes.
And neighbors in general did help. So when the action took place in the night leading up to 1st October 1943, the German police, the Gestapo, found almost nobody at home. So the 7,000 to 8,000 Danish Jews simply vanished into society, were hiding in society. And whereas the Germans believed they would deport in the first round some 6,000 Jews, they actually managed to deport 200 in the first round.
Mm-hmm.
And all the rest were hiding. And over the next weeks that followed, this huge operation of trying to organize shipment of those refugees over to Sweden, all of that was organized bottom-up by locals who simply engaged in order to help their fellow countrymen escaping.
What was striking to me in some of the diaries, and I'm not going to remember the names here, so fill me in, but I'm thinking particularly of the Farm family, and I would imagine this was quite widespread. There's something matter-of-fact about the way these diaries are written, it seems to me, Bo, that people opened their doors and said, yes, of course, come in. It's as though, of course we will help you. It's not a struggle for us to think about doing the right thing. We know what the right thing is.
I think for most citizens, this was seen not as an attack on a minority, not as an action directed against Jewish countrymen, but simply as an attack on them, on society, on democracy, on the values on which the entire society was based. And there was a very strong and, I think, very deep recognition in society that if this was allowed to happen, the very foundation on which society was built was crumbling, and that therefore people helped simply as an act of protecting their own society by helping their fellow countrymen.
Mm-hmm.
The diaries are, as you rightly note, very matter of fact, and there's this amazing situation where two families are stuck in a remote countryside, and they have a very very distant relation to a farmer. And they look him up. There are eight people. They knock on his door, and he's actually having a little party at his farm. A few neighbors are there, and suddenly they have these eight people standing in the courtyard asking for refuge. And the farmer let them in. The farmer and his wife let them live in their own bedroom. They feed them, and they have them living there. And when they leave next day, the refugees who are not poor offer them payment for having had them during the night. And the farmer says, you know what, we don't feel the war much out here in the countryside. So this is the first time we actually really feel it. So don't even bother about paying us. And this is a matter of course. We are only glad that we can help.
Mm. Let's go to some phone calls. Rich in Rhinelander. Hi, Rich.
Hi, I lived briefly in Denmark, and I was very impressed with the Danish people and their history during World War II. But my question is about population density. I was just checking on the numbers of Jews within particular nations prior to World War II. And Holland, I think, had about 140,000 Jewish citizens. In our family, our nation of origin is Lithuania. And Lithuania had a very symbiotic relationship with Jews. Vilnius, Lithuania as a whole, had about 220,000 Jews in it. And Vilnius, Lithuania, was known as the Jerusalem of the North but by Jews. And it was a somewhat friendly place to the degree that any place in Europe was friendly to Jews over the centuries. But the great shame was for Lithuanians that so many were slaughtered in World War II, when people turn against one another during wartime. And my question specifically is, when you have a smaller minority population, it just seems to me it's easier both to hide and or integrate people into the society. One thing I will say about Danes is dinner table conversations. I recall many Danes saying to me, well, Mr. Cohen was not would not be seen as a Jew. He may have been a merchant in the area, but he was just another Danish citizen. Mm-hmm. And I was always impressed with that attitude of the sense of full citizenship among Danes. Mm. So.
Thank you, Rich. Thanks for the call. What about population? Easier if the population is smaller?
Well, on the last remark, I think that is exactly the point about Mr. Cohen. He is just the grocer at the corner.
Mm-hmm.
And that is the whole point also of the title of the book, Countrymen. Now, as to the number of Jews, I'm trying in the book to compare three countries that were occupied within weeks from each other and all had the same status within this Nazi hierarchy of racists' ideology, Denmark, Norway, and the Netherlands. And the three countries, which were very similar, they were all democracies, they were all monarchies, but they had very different numbers of Jewish citizens. In the Netherlands, there was these 120,000, 140,000. In Denmark, some 8,000, and in Norway, only 2,000. So the numbers differed a lot. But in the Netherlands, three-quarters of the Jews were killed. In Norway, with less than 2,000, half of the Jews were killed. And in Denmark, with 8,000, almost none. So it doesn't seem to be only a function of the numbers.
You also write, you can't just look at this particular time. You write fairly extensively about the preceding 10 years of anti-totalitarian Danish politics and say that the moment that is so dramatic, the escape of the Danish Jews, can't be understood outside that political context.
Right.
It's an important context because it also, in some measure, explains why the Danes didn't come to the rescue of communists in Denmark.
That's absolutely true, and this story is linked to the dilemma which Denmark faced when Nazism was growing in Germany, and indeed communism was establishing itself in the Soviet Union, which we are also neighboring. And the political strategy that the Danish government developed was that the only possible defense Denmark could launch against Nazism and fascism and communism was to be extremely protective of democracy and the values underlying democracy. And there was a difficult but still a realization that if Germany attacked, there was no way the 4 million Danes could defend itself and hold back a German attack. So the strategy was to try to enhance the public support for democracy to the extent that these totalitarian ideologies would not take foot within Danish society.
Mm-hmm.
And the politicians framed it in a way that the enemy, the real enemy, was actually not the Germans or the Russians. The real enemy was communism and Nazism. And if the Danes became communists or Nazis themselves, those totalitarian ideologies had already won even before the war began. So there was a very strong political mobilization behind democracy. And that left only a very tiny fraction of the electorate supportive of communism and Nazism.
Mm-hmm.
Some 2% on each side. And that also meant that those who did not adhere to democracy were considered to be pariahs. They were outside society. And that was true for the communists as well as for the Nazis. Which is why when in the summer of 1941, when the German assault on the Soviet Union was launched, the Germans asked Danish police, Danish government, to round up the Danish communists. And Danish police did so.
Hmm.
And the Danish government and the Danish parliament supported this. So these people who were part of Danish society but had distanced themselves from democracy and had openly supported totalitarian ideas, those were not protected by society. And they were actually eventually deported to Germany together with the few Jews that eventually were deported in October 1943. And a great deal of them vanished in the German concentration camps.
Hmm. Our guest this hour is the author of Countrymen. It's a grand title, isn't it? Countrymen. The untold story of how Denmark's Jews escaped the Nazis, of the courage of their fellow Danes, and of the extraordinary role of the SS. Bo Lidegaard is with us, joining us by phone from his home in Copenhagen. He's editor-in-chief of the leading Danish newspaper in that country, Politiken, and the author of several books on modern history. He's been a diplomat in the Danish Foreign Service and was in the office of the Danish Prime Minister as ambassador and permanent undersecretary of state. He also has put together the team for the 2009 UN Conference on Climate Change that took place in Copenhagen. Here's our phone number if you'd like to join this conversation about this really, really worthwhile book. 800-486-8655 is our number. 800-486-8655. Email talk@wpr.org. And our Facebook page is The Kathleen Dunn Show. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. All right, Countrymen, the untold story of how Denmark's Jews escaped the Nazis, of the courage of their fellow Danes, and of the extraordinary role of the SS. We're talking with the author this hour of the show, Janie in Wisconsin Rapids. Hi. Janie, are you there?
Hello.
Yes, go ahead, please.
Oh, thank you. First, let me say it's quite a privilege to be able to speak with you today. And my questions or my comments are, I have friends out in Washington State, John Russo and his wife. His father was Jewish, but he never mentioned anything that happened in Denmark, and he left at a later age. He's probably around 60 or 65 now. I'm curious as to the Jews in Denmark now. How many are there? I was in Poland in 1985, and that population had dropped to less than 400. What happened to the Norwegian Jews? And why didn't the Nazis pursue the Jews in Denmark as they did in other countries?
Well, part of the difficulties that the Nazis faced in addressing what they termed the Jewish question or the Jewish problem in Denmark was that there was no registry of Jews. There was no special list or no way the Danish authorities would distinguish between citizens of Jewish origin one way or another. And that is still true. So no one can answer the question today, as they couldn't then, how many Jews are there? Because no one is keeping a record of that. There is only one category of Danes, and that's Danish citizens. And if you're a Danish citizen, you're a Dane, you're a countryman, and if you're not, you're not. It's that simple. And therefore, nobody knows the answer to the question of how many Jews are there today. What we do know is that almost all the Jews who lived in Denmark at the time fled to Sweden, and that was approximately 8,000. And almost all of them went back to Denmark.
Amazing.
After the war.
Isn't that something? Yeah.
And remained to live. And most of them, not all, but most of them found their property, their flats, their businesses, their workplaces untouched or unavailable. So there was a great degree of continuity, even if, of course, this was not always the case and not for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Now, as for the Norwegian Jews, the situation was very different. The number of Jews living in Norway was much smaller, but their fate was more dramatic in the sense that the Germans initiated discrimination against them much earlier in Norway. And the explanation for this is that whereas the Danish government remained in office under the German occupation, but without fighting, the Norwegian government did put up a fight. It was defeated within a few weeks, and the Germans installed a direct Nazi rule in Norway, introducing Nazi legislation and a Nazi leadership of the Norwegian bureaucracy, as well as Norwegian police. So in Norway, you had a situation where the Nazis were actually controlling civil society and the police, and it used this control to go after the Jews, and half of the Norwegian Jews were actually arrested, deported, and killed in Auschwitz.
Mm. Thank you very much for the call. Do you in Denmark talk about this story now? Do you feel, because it really is kind of a lesson to the world. I think your last sentence of your book is that the intimidation of one individual is a threat to the entire society. In October of 1943, the Danes acted upon that insight. There's something about this story that that is timeless and probably needs to be heard more often, don't you think?
Well, that is why I have written the book. The point there is very clear and very important, especially as all countries are struggling today more than ever with the issue of immigration. And we are living in a globalized world where in Europe as well as in North America, we all facing a huge pressure of immigration, and we are all facing the question of what does it take to be part of our society, and who do we recognize as our countrymen? So these are questions that are very acute also today, and just as they were not easy to answer at the time, they are still very controversial. And part of the motivation for trying to go so deeply into the considerations within Danish society at the time, and indeed within the German leadership, is also to explain that the answers to these questions do not come easy, and that the Danish society, in deciding not to put up a military fight, also, of course, placed itself in a position where critics could say that it did not do enough to actually fight the Nazis. So this is also a very interesting study of the dilemma of neutrality and how to cope with totalitarian forces that are stronger than yourself.
Yeah. Jerry in Milwaukee, hi.
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 I have some comments I think that would help you see Danish society, at least from an American perspective. I visited Copenhagen in 1958. I learned a couple of things. First of all, the Danish were perhaps, they were noted as being the most honest people in Europe. I rented a bicycle, and I stopped at a museum that had a lot of history of World War II. And I, first of all, I learned at that museum that the Danes marked the roofs of their buildings where the Nazis were having all of their leadership and supplies and so forth, so that the British, during the daytime, could destroy those buildings. But in any case, I leaned my bike against a tree outside this museum with my camera in it. I was in the museum for about 45 minutes and suddenly realized I didn't have my camera. So I went out to my bike, and there was my camera in the basket. And so also I learned that most Danes didn't understand English, but you don't start talking German in 1958. So I would start talking English, and then I would change to the German that I knew, and then I was welcomed with smiles and so forth. But the Danish society was, to me, so honest and so open, and as your guest is saying, the democratic principles were so much greater there than even in this country.
You think that's true, Bo?
Well, 1958 was the year I was born, so...
It was a very good year.
It was a good year, but it also feels a long time ago. And, of course, things have changed in Denmark, as it has throughout. And I think, actually, the hostility towards Germany is very different also because now the European Union and the developments since then. But it is true that democracy is very deeply engraved in this country and that we still reign very high in lists internationally of anti-corruption and of effective government. But the Danish society, like any modern society, is struggling with its own problems. And as much as I would like to say that we do not know of crime, we do know of crime. And we are also a society deeply divided on the issue of immigration and how to accommodate refugees and immigrants who are coming to our country and who want to be part of our society.
Thank you, Jerry, so much for your call. Mary in Westfield, hi.
Hi. I think it's interesting that supposedly we live in a democratic society here, and yet the principles have never been... although legally democratic, not morally democratic, we've always had such discrimination, a real history of discrimination against Jews in the United States. And I just wonder if it would be even thinkable that we would react in the same way as the Danes did. I just applaud their action.
Well, how many actions were there similar to the Danes? I know the Bulgarians acted somewhat similarly. Did anybody else?
No.
No.
The two main examples are Bulgaria and Denmark. And I think it's fair to say that the Bulgarian case was a very different one because there discrimination against the Jewish population, which was much bigger than in Denmark, discrimination were actually introduced, but eventually the Bulgarian government stopped short of actually deporting their Jews to Germany, and by this rejection saved the Bulgarian Jews from the Holocaust. The very special dimension of the Danish example is that the discrimination was stopped at the very root before it was actually introduced, and that there was this strong notion within society that even a first step that might seem innocent, like stamping identity cards with a J and thus singling out the Jewish part of the population, that even those first steps would be fatal and therefore had to be rejected very strongly.
Yeah. Is there, I think, probably the only story that we remember, and it's in the deep recesses of our minds now, is that the King of Denmark wore a Star of David and drove through the streets to let people see it. That story is not entirely true, is it?
No, it's actually not, because the point is here that the government and the king rejected that the Yellow Star be introduced, and therefore no one wore the Yellow Star. But the interesting thing is that it has been discovered very recently in the diaries of the king, the private diaries, that the origins of the story actually is a very real episode. Early in the war, in 1941, when the prime minister and the king discuss how to respond if the Germans insist that Danish Jews wear the Yellow Star. And the king tells the prime minister that he believes that if this request is put forward by the Germans, the only possible response would be for everyone to wear the Yellow Star. And quite obviously, the prime minister, finding this a very good response, couldn't keep his mouth shut. So he told this anecdote, and it traveled to Sweden, where it was published in a cartoon.
Ah.
And that cartoon then traveled to America. And, you know, at the time, the press was not always reliable. Today, of course, newspapers are reliable. You remember, I am a newspaper editor.
I know you
are. But at the time, newspapers were prone to exaggerate a little bit.
Mm-hmm.
And in the American version of the story, it was that King Christian actually was riding the streets of Copenhagen wearing the Yellow Star. But it was not reality. It was something he said he would do, should the situation occur.
We're out of time. I can't recommend your book highly enough. Thank you both so much for having written it, and thank you deeply for being with us this hour.
Thank you for inviting me. It's been a pleasure.
Our pleasure. Bo Lidegaard, Lidegaard. The book is Countrymen, the Untold Story of How Denmark's Jews Escaped the Nazis, of the Courage of Their Fellow Danes, and of the Extraordinary Role of the SS. The book is such an important book. So thank you, KP Whaley, for producing this hour. Thanks for your interest, everybody. We're with you tomorrow.